This podcast is brought to you by the Specialty Produce Network.
Welcome to Conscious Living here at the Specialty Produce Network. We are so glad you're here to support your lifestyle with the fastest growing resource for conscious families. So sit back, relax, connect, and enjoy. Hello and welcome. I'm Ashley Lee, and I'd like to introduce today amazing holistic health practitioner Ginny Carlson. And she's going to talk to us today about eating well, eating organically, eating healthy. Hello, Jenny. Welcome.
Thank you, Ashley. It's very nice to be here.
Thank you. I'm so glad you're here. So tell me, what got you started as being a holistic health practitioner in eating well?
Actually, it was my mother.
Wow.
We were both massage therapists, and she was very health-minded. And after I started to massage school and started learning about the body and how it works and taking nutrition classes and what have you, it just, it made so much sense to me that our bodies want to heal themselves.
Yes, they do.
They really want to do that. And if you give it the right food, the right fuel, it'll absolutely do that for you.
Yes.
So that got my interest piqued, and, you know, that was in 1989, actually, when I started studying and practicing and everything. So it's been a little... Yeah, I'm pushing 30 years here.
All right.
So, but that's how I got started. I think a lot of people in the healing field get there.
Yes.
Because of an experience of their own or a family member.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, so tell me, what spurred you about eating healthy for you? What did you find when you started to do that?
Well, I have fibromyalgia. Was diagnosed with it in the early 90s, and what you eat really affects your muscles and body pain. If your diet is too acidic, you're going to have a lot of inflammation and body pain, and the more alkaline you can keep your body, the more pain generators your body will make for you on your own. And so that was my original incentive, was to get well.
Yeah,
to get out of pain and get myself well.
Okay.
And once I did that, and I had all this new information and everything that I had accumulated in my brain, it was like, you got to go share this. I mean,
yeah.
You just can't sit on this information and not do anything with it.
Right.
So that's kind of how the whole thing got started.
That's so fantastic. So what information would you like to share with us today? What would be your point to get across to our listeners to help them understand what you now know?
There's a couple, but the main one is most people don't understand the power of fruits and vegetables and its connection to your diet and how your health is.
Yeah.
Diet and disease are directly connected. And if you feed your body junk food, you're going to feel like junk.
Yeah.
But if you eat healthy food, then you're going to have a vibrant essence about you.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And what do you consider healthy food? Share with us a little bit about what that means in 2017.
Wow. We live in really such an interesting time about healthy living, and especially with our food, because there's the GMOs that are out there and all of the herbicides and pesticides. And it's really hard to eat clean.
Yeah.
And then we have all of our environmental stuff, the herbicides, pesticides, gasoline fumes, all of the stuff that's polluting our air and our water.
Yeah.
That's affecting our bodies too.
Right.
So it's possible to eat to counteract that if you know.
There are foods that actually remove toxins from the body.
Yes.
Many things like milk thistle and artichokes.
And parsley and good stuff like that.
Cilantro.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and even if you're on a if you're eating a good amount of fiber in your diet, that's going to detox you a little bit each day.
Right.
So that's really important too. And not enough people pay attention to their bowel movements.
Yeah.
That's another issue in our society. A lot of people are constipated, and that's very unhealthy.
Yeah. Right. So, well, how would you suggest to our listeners how they could notice what it is that they're eating that's affecting their body or their health, and including their thinking health, their breathing health, their digestive health, all their muscle health? How can they start to notice what it is that might be contributing to their not feeling well, and then switch that out in a way that may not seem so painful or awful to make those switches?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's easy for us to sit here and talk about how healthy you can get by eating right, but for many people, they may not even notice that they haven't been eating right. What are some of the ways that people can notice in the clients that you see? You see clients from all walks of life. You see kids and adults and even older folks. Is that
mm-hmm.
correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And you consult with them and you work with them about developing healthy eating patterns and or finding organic foods. And what does that mean? And how do you put that into a recipe or meal planning throughout the day?
For me, I'll know in about 30 to 40 minutes if I've eaten something that doesn't agree with me or gets the inflammation going, because I'll get in pain.
Okay.
You can get bloated. You can get a stomach ache. You can get constipated. If you're having any of those issues, then your diet is directly affecting that. So I always tell people, here's a list of things that I know will cause you trouble. And they may have other additional things, you know, that I haven't thought about that causes them some issues too.
Right.
So it's kind of an individual thing, but there are some real culprits out there: sugar, processed foods, you know, things like candy and desserts and fried foods. The further away you get from nature with what you're putting in your mouth, then the more risk you have of causing yourself some issues. I used to see a lot of migraine patients when I had my massage business. And granted, a lot of it is associated with neck and shoulder muscles, but a big majority of it is attached to what you eat.
Yeah.
You know, and there's known trigger foods like milk and chocolate and, you know, stuff like that. But if people are paying attention to their body, they should really know in about a half hour or so if what they've eaten is going to cause them any issues.
Okay. And what would you suggest? How would they delineate what that is? Like, how would they break that up? So let's say they ate a sandwich, right? And they had bread and some meat and cheese and maybe lettuce and tomato. So what would – I know, right? But our average American sandwich, right? And even kids, right? Because we're going to teach them to tune into their body and notice. So why don't we try maybe the biggest culprit, right, would be breads and wheats and GMOs and
gluten
and the way that it's processed. Yeah. So if we took away the bread and then we made like a lettuce sandwich, for example, same ingredients, but then we took away the bread and waited 30 minutes after they ate that on that next meal. And if they didn't have the same, you could deduce, right, or deduct that it was the bread. If they have the same sort of issue, then maybe the next culprit, right, would be the cheese or the meat, right?
Absolutely.
That would do that, right?
Yeah.
And so then they could do an elimination kind of diet. That's what that means, is just to eliminate it in that moment to see if that same response or inflammation got created,
right?
Either bloating or constipation or reflux, or, you know, it's staying stuck in the stomach, lots of different kinds of digestive symptoms.
Right.
That's a great way. I think, too, that I know you know about a lot is, like, people getting affected in their brain and nervous system. So kids don't realize, and parents don't realize, that the foods can really affect the brain and nervous system.
Oh, absolutely.
What do you see in your practice with that? What kinds of foods could be some of the biggest triggers to, I don't know, creating brain fog or difficulty in memory recall or difficulty focusing?
Yeah. sugar is probably at the top of the list.
Yeah.
Things, sugary stuff. And actually, meat, all meat, I refer to them as dead animals.
Okay.
I've been a vegetarian for close to 30 years now. But meat and all dairy products are at the top of the list for inflammation.
Yeah.
And when you get that inflammation going in your body, you get pain. We have all these diseases out there that end in itis.
Yeah.
And all of that stuff is
inflammation.
Is inflammation and systemic inflammation and oxidative stress in the body. And most people don't understand that.
Yeah.
You know, I've worked with people that maybe they had a cholesterol issue or high blood pressure. And if they go on a plant-based diet, you know, they've turned their cholesterol numbers around in 30 days without one drug.
Right.
So it's meat and dairy and sugar, I would say, for food, are at the top of the list.
Yeah.
There's some additives, you know, like high fructose corn syrup is really, really an inflammation causer and stuff like that. But it's once you get that inflammation going in your body, it can cause all kinds of serious repercussions, even dental health, you have gum issues and stuff like that.
Right. And maybe too, people don't maybe not know what processed sugar is and means. It's basically white sugar. It's made from typical sugar cane. Most sugar cane in the country and around the world is GMO now, unfortunately. What does GMO do? GMO is dramatic because it was made in the laboratory. It was meant, I think, originally to actually help world hunger and different sort of initiatives, but it kind of went sideways. But what does GMO really mean? It means that they made something that was ahead of its time from a natural state about 1,000 years in advance. And so the genetics of those foods don't match the genetics of our bodies evolving. And our bodies then don't always recognize those food particles or molecules as food because it's not that sugarcane wasn't grown as we're growing on the planet.
Right.
It was grown way ahead of time. So our body has a difficult time recognizing it as food. And it creates all sorts of havoc inside the digestive tract, but also inside our body. It doesn't correlate or work as the same nutrient redistribution to the tissues as we would normally experience from non-GMO foods. So I didn't think many people really understand the impact of what GMO means. It just means really hard to digest because it's food that's not made naturally in relation to how we're growing naturally.
Yes.
So that's some of the discord between why GMOs aren't functioning very well. We found that through research that a lot of eating GMO wheats and grains, especially corn, impacts the ability to synthesize vitamin D. And that's why we're discovering that there's such a widespread vitamin D deficiency in America and in other countries that have these GMO grains as a surplus of food. And we found that it happened in two ways. It affects the skin, having disability to bring in vitamin D from the sun, but also then the vitamin D synthesis inside the liver. And it affects it that way. And that's why that's a big reason why our vitamin D levels seem to be dropping spontaneously throughout the population is it's really related to the food. And it's pretty remarkable to see that start to come up as understanding about how it really does affect our ability to absorb and receive these nutrients to our body, to our tissues. Yeah. So tell us a little bit more inspiration. Talk about a client, for example, that you have seen that you were able to really transform their living lifestyle from when you first met them to when they finished seeing you. And what did that mean for them? And you supported them.
I think one that really, really stands out for me, he's an older gentleman. I've actually known him for a very long time. And he was a smoker. And he ended up with circulation issues in his legs to where it was so painful he couldn't walk more than a block. He would have to sit down or turn around and come back. And so he was drinking Diet 7-Up.
Okay.
And that actually was the very first thing that we eliminated from his diet. I kept telling him, your body is really smart, and if you clear out that congested flow
right.
of blood to your lower body, you're going to see some improvement. And he did. We cleaned up his diet. He gave up. He didn't give up all meat, but he cut it way, way back, and he did eliminate the dairy. And he just started eating a lot of fruits and vegetables and got himself a blender and was doing smoothies and, you know, really getting with the program. And they were, when I first started working with him, he was thinking about going in and have some kind of surgery. They were going to, I don't know if they're going to try and ream out some of the veins in his legs to help with what he was going to do.
Embolectomy?
Yes.
Yeah.
And after about 5 weeks on the clean diet and the no diet 7-Up, that aspartame was, right. you know, will kill you, he started to be able to walk and be out of pain.
Wow.
And let's see, we've been working together now a little over a year, and he's almost 80, and he's doing wonderful.
Wow.
It's never, ever too late. I don't care how old you are.
Yeah.
But it's never, ever too late to clean up your diet and see what you can change.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, it's never too early for children.
I was just going to mention that, too, because I think it's really well misunderstood. I mean, I think many parents grew up in a time where, you know, getting their needs met was also like having sugar and having fun and having cupcakes and having ice mm-hmm. cream. And, you know, Baskin Robbins isn't around anymore. But, you know, I mean, it's like going to the ice cream parlor and having these sodas and shakes and all this stuff. And maybe back then it was made a little bit cleaner because it wasn't high fructose corn syrup. It was cane sugar and other things, but it was still not very positive for us. And it's still, maybe it was non-GMO sugars because we didn't have GMO sugar cane back then, but we did have sugar cane. It was processed. It was bleached. People don't realize white sugar is bleached.
Yes.
I mean, with chlorine, it's bleached. So it's not really the healthiest thing for us to take in chlorine particles.
Right.
And other things, and that we could actually have it through whole foods, whole strawberries, berries,
right.
Oranges, apples, all sorts of wonderful fruits. Even vegetables have lots of sugar in them as well that are very tasty and amazing
yes.
and wonderful source of carbohydrates and glucose and sugar for us than just having sugar cane itself.
Right.
And I think you're exactly right, because as children, they really get – so we as parents may accidentally give the idea that they deserve it.
I know.
Or that they need to have it. Or especially like the allergic kids, okay, well, they can't have milk or they can't have flour, so at least give them sugar, you know, at least give them sorbet instead of ice cream or something like that. And so instead – we end up still perpetuating unhealthy
yes.
eating and unhealthy patterns and getting their brains and their taste buds used to a certain level of food that it's very strenuous to help change those and to help them recognize that that they're not doing well. They're not at their peak performance.
Right.
They're not functioning as well as they could be.
Right.
Yeah.
It amazes me. I see a lot on Facebook parents, they're celebrating their child's birthday or, you know, some special event, and they put a picture of this cake.
Yeah.
And it's like, why we as a society, somehow we've been programmed to think that
right.
when we treat our children to something, it's got to be sugary and something that's going to kill them. You know, I just,
right.
I don't get it.
Right.
They make beautiful fruit cakes out of watermelon and all kinds of cantaloupe, really beautiful, tasty cakes.
Right.
And you're so right. The fruits and even, you know, some veggies is a wonderful source to get that sweet kick in your life. If that's what you're looking
right.
for.
Well, there's many other sweetener alternatives too. There's honey. Some agave syrups are pretty good. There's coconut sugar. There's palm sugar. There's all sorts of – there's even some organic sugars that they use for some recipes of different things. But, you know, I even wonder whether some people that are eating processed foods don't recognize how much sugar and how much ingredients that are in there that are really compromising their health.
Right.
I mean, most people say, well, no, this cookie doesn't have any sugar in it. You know, even if it's an oatmeal cookie, for example.
Yeah.
But it does. They don't realize it because maybe they don't make it at home. Maybe they haven't made it from scratch. Maybe they don't know. They put sugar in all kinds of things to get people to buy it because it tastes good.
Tastes better.
And it's also rather addictive.
Yes.
Sugar can be quite an addictive process to unwind. So how do you support people unwinding from an unhealthy diet and an unhealthy perspective to a healthy perspective without being it so painful? I know you do it in such fun and innovative ways. Could you share with us what some of those are?
Well, everybody's kind of individual, and we all know that trying to make mass changes overnight usually turns out to be a disaster.
Yeah.
So I work with families. We identify what it is that they need to cut back on and or eliminate, and we'll take a couple, you know, and eliminate. I educate them on reading labels.
Right.
So if you're going to buy stuff that's processed, read the label.
Right.
And understand that those numbers are per serving, not what's in the whole container.
Right.
And I encourage them to not eat anything that has more than 4 grams of sugar in it. That's 1 teaspoon.
Yeah.
And we'll take a couple of items, say ice cream and cheese, because that's a good one to get rid of too, and go for a week, you know, and see how they do.
Yeah.
And then we'll just work through their list.
Right.
Sometimes I'll go over to they don't know what's in their cupboard, if it's healthy or not. And so I'll go to their house, we'll go through their cupboard, and we'll separate everything.
Yeah.
This stuff is good, this stuff is not.
Yeah.
And then I'll go over the label with them and explain why this bad stuff is over here.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And then they can get a real connection. A lot of people don't know how to read a food label. They don't know what it means.
Yeah.
And
I know, even like shopping here, especially produce, they have such amazing things, and they have many different kinds and levels of food. And to determine, like, what are the numbers? Like, I still struggle with, like, what are the numbers and the label of what is organic, and then what is pesticide-free, and then what is grown locally? And they all have, which is great, but nobody knows what the numbers mean. I mean, even in typical grocery stores now, they now have organic sections in different sections, but they don't know what one really means. And I wanted to talk to you about that. When picking fruits and vegetables, it's pretty neat. I mean, we have these now fancy green bags that help keep the fruits and
vegetables. I have those.
Yeah.
Debbie Myers' green produce bags. They're awesome.
And so, and that helps keep the food fresh while in the refrigerator, because we're so used to, for decades, buying foods that had all of this on it, which we didn't know was on there. We didn't know fungicides, pesticides were on there. And then we're used to eating this food. And then we go to buy organic, and we're used to buying for the week. So then 3 days out, all our food went south.
Yes.
It got moldy. So I'm like, wow, that's how much fungicide is on the food, literally on it, so that the peaches or the strawberries or the raspberries or the carrots or anything doesn't go moldy or spoiled in just about 3 days.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, as a society, we got used to shopping once a week. So
yes.
We also don't know how to reintegrate that into shopping twice a week, because the food doesn't last as long.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, what Specialty Produce here is, they move produce so much, so fast, that their food that you get out off of their shelves is just arrived from the farms, from the places that they get them from. And so they have a longer shelf life because they haven't been sitting in the grocery store for two or 3 or 4 days also.
Yes.
But that's why maybe why typical grocery stores did have trouble bringing in the organic food, because they weren't able to turn over the food as fast.
That could be.
So in looking at those things, but knowing that when you go to shop for organic food or pesticide-free and fungicide-free, that your food is, you need to eat it. Or you need to chop it up and save it and cook it, or like Lori had mentioned in our last podcast, freeze it. Uh-huh. And those sort of different things to look at different levels of food preparation and how to work with them easily so that we don't create food spoilage because we didn't realize right. it. And then we feel bad. We bought organic and then it went bad. And then we're like, well, no, I'm not going to buy organic anymore because now it's going to go bad. We just didn't understand what was or wasn't happening to that food. It's that it went spoiled because it was real.
Yes.
It was whole. And it was alive and it's ready to eat. And that alive food helps us even feel more alive inside our bodies.
Yes. Yes. It's amazing the difference, that the changes that people will see in their body when they start eating healthy, when they give up all of the junk. You have more energy, your skin glows, your eyes twinkle, your hair and nails are stronger and grow, and it's amazing. And the shopping thing, I think time is such a big issue for a lot of families, especially moms.
Yeah.
Working moms with children, you know, they amaze me. I don't know how they do it all.
Yeah.
And I can see where going to the store one day a week would really be most their favorite thing. But and I was one of those people when I gave up all of the meat and everything. I was just used to going to the store once a week, but I have to go twice now.
Yeah.
And I'm a big supporter of local farmers markets.
Yeah.
Because you know that it's fresh.
Right.
And that it's...
It was grown in the area.
It was grown in the area.
It's less of a footprint.
Right.
Right.
And so I encourage my clients to find a good local farmer's market.
Yeah. And I really think so. And then meal planning. Do you help them with that meal planning and helping them? So let's say they could only shop once a week, so they could meal plan and get the freshest vegetables when they go shopping or when they go to the fruit stand. And then eat that at the beginning of the week. Know that that needs to be eaten in 3 days.
Eat that first, yeah.
Eat that first or create them so that, I mean, you know, I guess berries kind of go moldy first. Is that true? More than most foods that are fresh. But so what do you do with the berries? So what can you do? You can cut them up. You can prepare them in a way that you seal them up so that they last up a little bit longer. You can cook them into something. Mm-hmm. Right. You can do different things that will. So you can strawberries don't freeze super well, but blueberries freeze fantastically. So you can get all kinds of other things that maybe freeze well, and then you can bring it out later in the week so that you don't have to shop.
Yeah. Reinvent it into something else.
Right. Yeah. Right. So taking a look at that kind of grocery shopping to support you in creating, still having organic and fresh, alive food, but then preparing it in such a way that supports you throughout the whole entire week. So that maybe in the end of your week, you're having food that you prepped early in the week, but then frozen, and then you came back out and reheated it.
Right.
And that would still support that process of staying right. that way without having to go if you weren't able to get another person to support you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Meal planning and prepping is really, really important, because when I know I have issues with it sometimes, I can only imagine how it is for a mom with kids, that if you don't have in your head what you're going to have for dinner, and it's 5 o'clock and you haven't made any preparation for that yet, everybody's going to be hungry and cranky, and you're going to fix anything you can to get food in them.
Yeah.
So having a plan really sabotages the whole thing.
Right.
So I work with people.
So you're going to pick that box off of the pantry that's been in there for a while.
Yeah.
Because it's easy. You add water, you bake it, and you're done. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's, you know,
we're not eating live food anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's, you can take a person's schedule and hopefully find out, you know, where they can, where they can slip in some meal planning and shoot, man, recruit your kids.
Yeah.
Get some input from them. You know, see what they want to eat and have them help. And another thing that I've come up to realize is that if you're growing your own food at home, kids get involved in that, and they just love it.
It's fantastic helping them watch it grow. And it doesn't take up a lot of space.
No, it doesn't.
You can even do them in pots.
Yes.
People have been so inventive. I've seen on social media that there's been even living in an apartment, you can build this or buy these shelving units where they like grow in a tower.
I've seen those.
You know,
really,
and
nice.
All different kinds of ways that you can grow little fruits and vegetables that way. You can grow herbs and start to introduce herbs into. Herbs have just such an amazing process on cellular regeneration.
Yes, they do.
On such a level that I think is not well understood by the public, and really, really supportive. And by the way, tasty.
Yes.
You know, it really adds elements and layers of flavors into foods that even, I believe, children would love a lot as well. Yeah.
For sure.
So tell me, how do you help transition a child if you have a child client and they're stuck on Doritos or Cheetos and, you know, cookies every once in a while, and they demand a dessert after dinner? And how do you talked about, you know, moving one little thing out at a time, but how do you really help them get engaged with, after they've moved some of that, the junk food out of their body and they've eliminated, but how do you get them engaged in really enjoying whole live fresh foods? I mean, how is it that you help them connect to that?
Sometimes that can be a real challenge, especially for the young kids. I've had some good results, and this kind of depends on the age of the child. But like if you take somebody that maybe is on the autistic spectrum, or they have allergies or asthma or what have you, and if you explain to them that the way they're feeling can be altered by what they eat, and you kind of have to get them to buy into it from the beginning, because you know you're a mom. You can't force a child to eat something.
Right.
It just doesn't work. So you have to get everybody's buy-in from the beginning. Like, yes, we're going to do this. And then the child wants to say, yes, I don't like pain in my arm anymore, or, you know, what it is that's going on with them, and have them be willing to make changes to make that happen.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to share something and be really vulnerable here and authentic, is when I was growing up, I was allergic, and I didn't tolerate foods a lot when I was little. And I remember telling my mom, I love my mom, and she didn't know any better back in the, this was back in the 60s. But I said, you know, I think this is when Wonder Bread came out. I don't think they have that anymore. but, you know, processed bread. And I'd eat it, even wheat, even general wheat. It didn't matter. And we didn't have GMOs back then. But I clearly had a wheat allergy, and I clearly had wheat intolerance and gluten intolerance. And what happened was I would eat it, and I would bloat, and I would say something. And I was very young. I think I was under the age of 6. And I said, you know, wheat does not work for me. I cannot eat this anymore. And she so cutely said, and I know she didn't mean it, but she said, well, you're just fine. You can eat it. You can eat what we serve you because you're still alive. And so I said, yeah, you're right. I'm still alive.
I'm not dead.
So I can eat it. I can eat it. Yeah, I can eat it. So what I did was I accidentally, all of us didn't know these health repercussions from that. And what had happened was I grew up with an unconscious thought, yeah, it's safe for me to eat wheat. I'm still alive. I'm still alive. I'm still alive. So I unconsciously kept telling myself that and never realized or connected that wheat was, because it got that thought from my own instinctive understanding, got extinguished by that belief thought or that thought pattern. And I kept that for well until long adulthood, and had chronic inflammation and allergies, and kept eating wheat and kept eating wheat and dairy and all different kinds of things that were stimulating that. And I was kind of a special case. I won't go into those deep details. But I thought it was really amazing because parents and other caregivers of children don't realize what they're saying. They don't realize yes. that that impacts the child's belief systems about the foods.
Yes.
And I really did every day say, yep, I could eat wheat. I'm still alive. Look at that. You know, but I wasn't well alive. I was inflamed.
You were struggling.
I had chronic problems my whole life. And it wasn't till I really understood that and helped remove some of the allergies and know that that could happen that I then started to feel better and do better in life. And so I just wanted to share that one moment of indiscretion that my mom had. She didn't know that right. it was going to cause that kind of inflammation or problem in life. And so from that, I realized, though, that it was important to share, even if we do make a mistake or say the wrong thing. Or I hear parents all the time talk about, well, they deserve to have the cookie, or they were really good, or they deserve to have ice cream because they were super good today, or they did really well on the spelling
yes.
test. And so we have to take away the sense of deservedness with food.
Right.
Everyone deserves food, and everyone deserves healthy, clean food for a healthy, clean body. And when we behave good, that's always great to reinforce with something good or positive to reinforce that. But let's reinforce it that they were just good in and of themselves. They were being in their true nature. They were doing what they wanted to do. They were doing what they decided in society was important for them to do. But it didn't mean that they had to have sugar or something to eat to reinforce that behavior.
Right.
Yeah.
Whenever I meet with moms and families and someone will make a statement like that, I'll always preface it by, no, I don't mean to insult you here, but encouraging, telling your child that they've been really good today and they deserve all this sugar, you're basically saying, here, it's okay, we're gonna set you up to get diabetes and, you know,
right.
all this other health stuff that goes along with the sugar. So people just don't
right.
know. They don't know.
When it actually feeds on an emotional level and a mental level an addiction.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Because when we grow older and we get to adulthood, oh, I was good. I had a great day at work, or I did all my work, or I did everything, and now I deserve to have ice cream at the end of the day. We keep those same unconscious patterns
yes.
throughout our adulthood, and then we wonder why we're addicted to ice
right.
cream.
And we pass it along to our children.
Right.
You know, so it's an education thing. It's a, what do you call it when something just keeps going on for
right.
generations? It's something has to happen to break the cycle.
Right. And we're it.
And we're it.
We're it. Right here listening to this podcast.
Yes,
we are it.
We are it.
So for people to get in touch with you and to get further nutritional training, gosh, I think that that's so amazing that you help them really discern in their pantry and their refrigerator what works and what doesn't work for them is really a huge gift. I think people really do not know how to read labels. I think we do. We need to have a country that and a world that produces better understanding of what food does and doesn't do for us and how it helps us be healthy. And I appreciate the services that you provide. How can people get a hold of you? Could you give them information about how they could get a hold of you and seek your services to really revamp their nutritional home?
Okay. They can email me. My email address is jcarlso, the number 2, at san.rr.com. That's always a good way. You can call and text me at 619-993-6759.
And you live here in San Diego,
yeah,
California.
I'm in San Diego, yes. I'm on Facebook.
Fantastic.
I have a large following. And
what is your Facebook page called?
Jenny Carlson, Holistic Health Practitioner.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank
yeah.
you.
So
all right.
Lots of ways to connect.
Well, thank you for joining us. And look on her Facebook page at Jenny Carlson, HHP. And look her up for email or on her phone number to get your family revamped, to get your nutritional pantry up to the par that you'd like to create. Have a wonderful day, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for another amazing episode of Conscious Living here at the Specialty Produce Network. For more information on how to support your lifestyle with the fastest growing resource for conscious families, visit our website at www.centerforconscious.kids.com. That's www.centerforconscious.kids.com. Join us again next week as we get a little bit more conscious and a little bit more centered, and we'll see you then. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you.